I met Tom when I was 4 years old and he was 14. Tom and his family moved to Oxnard about a year before our family did. His father was a leader in the church in Oxnard, and Tom followed in his footsteps and is still a leader in that congregation. Tom is a man who you would call a jack of all trades and a master of many. He has an amazing kind of resume, and he has passed that on to his sons as well, and his grandsons for that matter. They are people with many talents. Tom is what I would call a non-linear thinker. And as you hear him speak, I think you'll get a sense of that. Tom is not only a deep thinker, but he thinks kind of outside the box. He thinks in ways that many people do not. And because of that, and because he thinks deeply, he is able to kind of put his finger on some things in Scripture that otherwise might be missed, and it would be our loss as a result. And so while Tom is probably better known for his song leading than for his preaching, I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say tonight. Tom?
I muffed right off of that. One of the benefits of this podium in Oxnard, you can't see the speaker's knees shake. I was encouraged to speak to a public by Curtis Manor, which was one of our early preachers in Oxnard, and he was a really good guy, and he didn't pound on us. He taught us, and he pointed, you know, here's how you do this, how you do that, and then develop your own way of speaking. So I'm a product of Curtis Manor. I'm an aerospace engineer, retired, and we had to look at things differently. We had to always be prepared for something that was going to be different. Customer calls up and says, we want one of these, except. That was my department. I was the except. And if they needed 50 or 60 of something or 100, when we made thousands, I was the one that worked on the onesie-twosie jobs. And so we had to be prepared. And that's what my lesson's about, being prepared for what's coming. Isaiah chapter 1, verses 16 and 17. Wash yourselves, make yourselves clean, remove all the evil of your deeds from my sight, cease to do evil, learn to do good, seek justice, reprove the ruthless, defend the orphans, and plead for the widows. There was a rebellion in Israel. They were having a problem. And God says, here's how you stop it. Don't do this. And God's hand was there, but the Israelites wandered all over the place. They did all sorts of strange things in spite of the fact that God had given them a path to walk on. We're like that. We have a path. We've got the book that tells us what to do, how to do it. And how many times do you see people wandering off? I went just this past August. I took a trip. Got out of town for a couple of weeks. And in driving back, I stopped in Tucumcari, New Mexico, to go to church. And there were three churches listed in the Western Church Directory, which I obviously had a very old one. There were three shuttered buildings. There was no church in Tucumcari. Also, there were very few people because it looks like half the town had moved away. But there was no Church of Christ there. So I had to hurry to the next town. And very fortunately for me, I found a church that was welcoming, like most churches are, and we had an ice cream social afterwards. And so, you know, there was a good part of something that I thought I was going to miss. And so when we look at what God has told people to do and how to do it, it's not something that we have to think about. It's something we have to do. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. Until I come, give attention to the public readings of Scripture, to exhortations and teachings. Do not neglect the spiritual gift within you, which was bestowed upon you through the prophetic utterances with the laying on of hands by the presbytery. Discipline. Discipline yourselves. Now, I'm working on my weight. And it is tough. I'm under 200 pounds for the first time in 15 years. Significantly under 200 pounds. I won't tell you where, but I'm under. It takes discipline to do all of these things. It takes discipline to live. It takes discipline to drive on the freeways in California without going completely crazy. But God tells us that you have to neglect, you cannot neglect the spiritual gifts. That's what we have. That's what we work with. Because we hear people telling us all sorts of things all the time. And you listen, you say, where did he get that? How in the world did he come up with that one? He read the same book I did? Where did he, you know, what's he thinking? And people are followers of that. They'll say, oh, that sounds good. And off they go on a tangent. It's like motorcycle trails in the desert. Somebody puts a motorcycle trail out, and everybody goes like, and then pretty soon there's motorcycle trails all over the place. And if you don't know what you're doing, you can get lost in a heartbeat. And that's the way that the religious world is. We've got tangents running everywhere and every place. And if you don't stick to the word and follow the map that's been given us, you're going to get lost. Titus chapter 3, verse 1. Remind them to be subject to the rulers, to authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good deed. When you think about good deeds, you say Boy Scouts. It's not that. And yet it's not goody two-shoes. It's looking at something, and these are opportunities for us. Good deeds are things that come to us. And we don't just say, I'm too busy, I can't do that, or I'm going to make time for that. This person needs some counseling, some guidance, and I think I can help them with it. And don't just say no. Oh, I can't. But when I was first asked to preach, I said, oh, I can't do that. Deer in the headlights. Oh no, I can't do that. And again, Curtis Manor. I love that man, and I visited him wherever he was when he was after he left Oxnard. I meant to go see him because he was such a, and he was not very big. But he was a giant in the scriptures. 1 Peter 5, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, I exhort the elders among you, as your fellow elder and witness to the sufferings of Christ and a partaker of the glory that is to be revealed, the shepherd of the flock of God among you, exercising oversight not under compulsion, but voluntarily according to the will of God, and not for sordid gain, but with eagerness. Go at it. Full force. It's like when someone puts a really nice dessert in front of you and you don't want to eat it too fast. You want to approach it slowly so you can savor it. Because people skip through the word and they'll pick and choose things. They'll throw this and this and this, and you'll see, well, that doesn't have any connection. But it made them feel good. But it's not the path. Because for instance, if you only gave a person, like if, you know, you go in the backcountry, I have a brand new device that tells me where I've been. And believe me, it's a necessity. Because if you're on a trail in the mountains and you don't turn around and look backwards once in a while, you don't know what it looks like coming back. And you turn around and say, I wasn't there. Oh, yes, you were. You're just looking at the backside of that tree. This device, you're carrying along and you press it when you start. Go. And when you make a turn, you press it again. And when you get three turns. And so when you decide to go backwards, you just reverse it and it points. And I mean, it's a compass. It just go that way. And if you know, if you're on trails, which makes it easier. Now, we have that. It's right here in the book. It's the compass that we need to take with us. But in the case of, you know, when you're out walking around or being dealing with the public or in business or at home, whatever. You have to have that compass in your head. You have the availability of that compass in your head to direct you, because we can get lost easily. Brand new town, I traveled on business. I was an aerospace engineer for 43 years, and I was sent off into the hinterlands often. And some of the traffic situations that you run into in some of the old downtown Midwest, they were horrible. And interchanges and things going, and this was way before GPS was available. And I'm out there stumping around. So what I had, I made a deal with the company. When they first sent me on the road, I didn't want to do that. So I said, I'll tell you what, you have a rep in Chicago, have him meet me at the airport. And we'll take care of business. And then, and I wanted my own car. I didn't want to have to ride around with a salesman because he always stopped at the places that I didn't want to go to. And that's one of the, that's another thing that I did. When they asked me to travel, I told them, I hear all the horror stories or the funny stories coming back from the guys that were on the road. And they were, oh boy, we had a great party. It lasted all night long and cops almost came, you know. I'm thinking, you do this on purpose? And I said, so I don't want to do that. So we had reps all over the country. And so the rep would come in and take care of the politics. And I got to do my job and then go sightseeing or whatever I wanted to do. But our lives have to be controlled by what we read in the Word, not what we see. Because we see things that are enticing. Oh, that looks good. Oh, I want one of those. You can't have all those things. You can if you're wealthy, but does it do you any good? No. My father was a very simple man, not complex at all. He was born in 1893. He grew up in northern Michigan, went to school on a wagon with runners on it because the ground was frozen. He talked about digging in the fall. They dug a slit trench in the yard to bury vegetables in, and they put straw and then wood over it. And as they were taking, as the winter progressed and spring was around the corner, they had removed most of the wood and most of the straw. And according to him, they were down to salt, pork, and oatmeal. Because you lived, there was no store around the corner. We visited his house, my grandfather's house. Big old black house out in the middle of a field. Had to go up the stairs by walking on the tread ends because the stairs had all fallen apart. Kevin and Kristen, we all had a good time. But so I got to see that, and I got to see how my father lived, how simple the life was where he lived. It wasn't complex. It wasn't, not many distractions. Now, he was a Methodist. When my mom married him, he went to Methodist law. And my mom was from Tennessee, from a good old Church of Christ, National Tennessee family. But my father directed me in a lot of ways, even though he was an older man. Because my kids would, the guys that I knew, they would see me and my dad and say, is that your grandfather? No, that's my dad. Really? Because he was small, old and gray. And he looked small, old and gray. And they thought, and really, in reality, he could have been my grandfather. Because I was born to grandparents from the standpoint of age. But he taught me. He kept, he was always found a church. When we traveled, that was one of the things that got me started on looking for churches when we were traveling. He always made sure there was a church someplace that we were on where we were going. And this was before interstates, it was before maps, it was before the books that we have on the church. And he was my mentor from the standpoint of Christianity. And it was a good experience. People say, I've heard horror stories about kids talking about their family, how horrible their families were. My family wasn't like that. And then in every place we went where there was a church, the greater family was like that. You were welcomed. You didn't say, who's that group over there? Who are they? Everybody ran up and shake your hand. When Jerry and I were traveling around the country, it was unbelievable. You walk into a place and it was like you'd been there forever because it was warm, comfortable, and everybody, and they sang all the same song. Philippians 4 and 8. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence and if anything worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things. Not the bad stuff, the good stuff. And think of excellence. Because in this day and age right now, everybody's kind of down. The economy's bad. Things are going wrong in the world. We've got politicians that we don't like. things in general. And you could get depressed in a heartbeat. And you would if you didn't have a root in something, it would really be traumatic. But we have roots. Each other, the Word, your family. And how many people do we know that have no family? Or they've gone off in their family and the family doesn't know where they are. And it's a sad thing because these people often just wander around. Look at the number of people hiking on interstate at the off-ramps, going someplace with a backpack and a thumb. Now, in my brother, who was in the older group of kids, he hiked all over, walked and hitchhiked all over the upper Midwest before he went into the service in World War II. And he had a great experience. And he didn't get hurt by it, but he talked about the deprivation. He didn't have a lot of money. It was just depression was, hadn't even been over. And so they're out there, and the people that were on the road then, you look at the movies about the depression and these people living in their cars on the side of the road, and they all came to California. And it was hard. It was a hard life. And it's made easier, not physically necessarily, but intellectually easier, if you've got a family. And this is a family, because everywhere that Jerry and I have gone to church, it's a family. Because it doesn't take very long before you realize that there's a bunch of people in there that have come up and spoke to you. You've been asked to do things, or like many times, hey, Tom, are you a preacher by any chance? And they don't know what I'm going to say, but they trust me, because you're a member of the church. Now, that's not a guarantee. Sometimes we get fooled. Philippians 4 and 13. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. God provides. We've got to ask for it, though. We can't throw ourselves on the ground and get this, I can't go on. We got people doing that. Lots of them do that. They get so desperate that they'll do just about anything except go to the Word, go get counseling, come to the church and ask for help. That's what we're here for. We're not saying, your clothes are too shabby. You can't come in here. You're just a bum. Go away. No. But you know who gathers those people up? The people that run those corner churches that preach just about anything. And they bring them in because they feed them and give them a house. Now, we can't be doing all things for everybody. But we can look toward that and strengthen each other. In Corinthians chapter 9, verses 19 through 22. This is Paul. For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a slave to all that I might win the more. And to the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might win Jews, to those who are under the law as under the law, though not myself being under the law, that I might win those who are under the law, to those who are without law as without law, though with not being without the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those who are without law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, that by all means save some. That's a telling statement. I'm not going to save them all. Paul tells us that. But he saved some. He tried. And that's what we have to do. We just can't say, I can't do that. I just can't save everybody. That's right. Paul told us that. You're not going to save everybody, but you can't stop trying. You've got to try. Door-to-door salesmen, which we don't see much of anymore. I can remember when I was a kid, there were a plethora of them. Look at that. When I was working, I was throwing big words at people. And they would say, what's that word mean? I said, look it up. I pulled it on my kids, too. Look it up. So my kids all ended up with a vocabulary because I told them to look it up. But when you have these things facing you and you know what the decisions we need to do and what we need to make and the things we need to do after we've made the decision, because how many people have had good intentions? Whoa, boy, this sounds like a great thing. We're going to do this right. And when the head count comes, where'd those folks go? What happened? Why aren't they here? They all said that they were going to be here. And that's when the reality of what they've been asked to do sets in. You know, I can't do that. But in any effort that a church group does, there's always something for somebody to do, regardless of your level of competence. And we need to be that way. We need to be constant in our attention to the people around us, to teaching, using this word. Use it, because that's what we have it for. It's not something that's a secret. We're going to keep this to ourselves. We can't tell anybody, because this is really good. We're supposed to be proclaiming it, not just hoarding it, because we're not told to do that. Go preach. Go teach. Be examples. Be seen. Let people see you do things. Now, we have a lot of good Samaritans that run around and do a lot of really good things without any accolades. But that's social. That's social. I know a couple of older people in Oxnard that do a tremendous amount of work for the elderly. And they don't look for anything for it other than the compensation that they get on doing good things. In Matthew 25, verses 20 and 21, and the one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted five talents to me. I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful in a few things. I will give you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Efficient use of his time. He was given something to do, and he did it. He didn't say, I can't do that. It's too hard. Too hard. It's going to take too long. It's complicated. And all the other excuses that people give for not being able to do something. When, in fact, most of it is they won't do something. It's not they can't. They're not able. They just won't. And we're not supposed to be like that. We cannot give up on people who are lost. We can't do it. We've got to be constant. We've got to be out there talking with people. No, it's uncomfortable sometimes to go in and talk to somebody you've never met before, and you don't know what they've been, where they're going, but we have to try. And you know you're not going to get hurt by it. You might be rejected by it, but look at athletes that are in training. Just look at how they are. I can remember, I ran track in high school because I didn't want to get in those banging up. I couldn't play basketball for sour apples. I was big enough to play football, but I didn't like the way the coach treated people, which was the language that you hear on a corner by a bunch of, you know, sailors, I guess. And so I ran track. And I was a sprinter. I didn't want to run very far, so I was a sprinter. And there was a guy that was about 8 inches shorter than I am, little short legs. He could run. He could outrun me any day. And I'm watching this guy, and his leg is just a blur, you know. But I never give up. Never finished first, but I never gave up. It was something that he was better than me at, physically. And we give up on things that we think are intellectually difficult. We say, we can't do that. And I hear that all the time from people. I can't do that. Did you try? Well, no, but I know I can't do that. If I took on projects, and I was given things on the engineering world that, you know, say, you know, this is a tough one, guys. Well, see what you can do with it. And with a little perseverance and putting heads together, that's what we had a group of engineers. Well, we never had one engineer. We used to have a group. And you say, okay, guys, we got a problem. How are we going to work this out? When I went to work for this one company, G&H Technology in Santa Monica, I inherited a mess. When I went down there, I was hired. They were moving to Camarillo. That's why I went to work for them. I actually rode my bike twice to Santa Monica back, and I decided I didn't want to do that again either. There was a couple of hills around Pepperdine that were really not too much fun. So I go into this place, and I'm looking around, and there's a whole list of names on the bottom of a drawing. There's the guy who drew it, and there's all the people that signed off on all the effort, all the engineering, and it was in the part. And so I'm in there doing some analysis on it, doing statistical analysis on stack-up of tolerances, the thing, you know, was it going to work or not? Because we had made several and had government approval for them. And I'm looking at these drawings, and they were awful. And if you've ever been, is a stack-up, for instance, you have a datum line, and every dimension comes from the datum line to a feature. And if you go from datum line to feature, to feature, to feature, to feature, every one of those is a tolerance. And you can end up with this part never working unless the machine shop was really good. We have that in our lives. We put things where we let them stack up on us. And then pretty soon, it's not working. Go back and start over. Go back and start over. Because we can do that. As long as you're still breathing, you can go back and start over. And so I took this project over. And if it hadn't been for two very bright young men on a CNC machine, we would have never been able to produce those things because the government had those drawings. And they were going to check to those drawings. Now, nobody was watching. They just let this group of guys do whatever they were doing. And whoever was in management wasn't. Now, the church doesn't have managers. We have each other. We have each other. And we all need to take each other's back. Every time, if something goes wrong, we collectively come together and do things. That's what we're being, we're taught in the scripture to do that. It's our duty to help people. It's our duty to go outside the church and help people. By convincing them, this is the way that they should be working and doing what their lives are different. And that's the hard one. A lot of people don't want to do that. They're afraid to meet new people. And they're afraid to talk to new people. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to approach it. The Brotherhood has so much good literature that's available to people that gives you the foot in the door, so to speak, for yourself, not the reality of putting your foot in the door. The reality of what you need to know, how you need to work with it. So you can bring these people out of the world and into the fold. John 15:7-8. If you abide in me, and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish, and it shall be done for you. But by this is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit, and so prove to be my disciples. That's what we have to be. We have to be that fruit bearer. We have to be the example. In Colossians, first chapter, verses 9 and 10, for this reason also, since the day we heard of it, we have not ceased to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all spiritual wisdom and understanding, so that you may walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, to please him in all respects, bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. That's what we need to do collectively, personally. I can't make any one of you any better than you can. Our goal is individual, one person at a time. Start with me. I'll help somebody else. And then collectively, we become a strong. Look at a football game. I watched a couple today. You watch a football game, and it's teamwork. It's teamwork. I didn't want to be banged around. I was big enough to play football in high school, but I didn't really want to go out there and get hurt all the time, so I ran track. But I saw the competitive nature of guys in sports, and I just chose not to follow that. It wasn't what I wanted to do. But when you work together, and we as a group, as a church in Ventura County, we need to work together, not just have this congregation doing something and that congregation doing something, and it may not be counterproductive, but it's not as productive if we work together. And if we do this diligently, pay attention, look around you. What can we do? Who can I help? Who needs help? There's an awful lot of people in these communities in Ventura County that need help. They need help physically, and they certainly need help spiritually. So if anything here that you've heard this evening has motivated you to do anything, the time is now for you to come forward and make your request. This was with you, trust in Jesus.